Welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week we have a different host and a different focus as we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe. I'm your host this week, Father Joseph Mary. Today we'll be talking about enhancing the beauty of the Mass as an important element to bringing about the Eucharistic revival in the United States. Bishop Thomas Olmsted is Bishop Emeritus of Phoenix, Arizona. Derek Clues is the choir director and organist for the EWTN Choir. And Giorgio Navarini is the director of Floriani, a men's vocal ensemble that promotes sacred music. Bishop Olmsted, it was in 2012 that you wrote a series of articles for your Catholic newspaper entitled Singing the Mass. Why did you think that was important?
Well, I think my own experience as a priest and then as a bishop, but also the teaching of the church and the example of Benedict Cardinal Ratzinger gave me a conviction that we need to be especially attentive to how much difference it makes to have sacred music. And also, I wanted to do it because we had some really good music, but it wasn't sacred, that was being used during the Mass. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show how we needed music like that for devotional reasons and for evangelization. But for the celebration of the Mass itself, sacred music was what was needed. So it was a desire to kind of give kind of clear teaching about what the Church has given us, a great wealth of good music, and then some really good direction about how to use it.
Now, in your essay, you do make that distinction between religious music and sacred music. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes. When a lot of times I've noticed in parishes, not only in the Diocese of Phoenix, but before I was bishop in Wichita and came from the Diocese of Lincoln, that a lot of music that people liked was good music, but it really wasn't primarily sacred music. And so I didn't want to discourage musicians from producing really good music that could be used for evangelization and devotional purposes. But I wanted to be sure that we were using music that really enhanced the most important part of our lives, which is the sacred liturgy, yes. the Eucharist itself. So that clarity seemed to be very important. And I wanted to do it in a way that would encourage all our musicians to use their gifts for the sake of praising God. And so that the music that we use during Mass would really help our people be elevated and lifted up into the great mystery of God's love for us and the great gift of Jesus to the Father that's happening during the celebration of the Holy Eucharist.
Yes, I remember I was an organist in our small little parish in Worthington, Iowa, and basically I would choose four hymns, entrance, offertory, communion, and recessional, but the rest of the Mass was not sung. So what you're talking about is the very, the order of the Mass, the ordinary of the Mass, that those should be primary and also to draw on the Church's sacred traditional tradition.
Yes, exactly. The Church has really given us a great treasure with sacred music, and there is an order within it which is rather simple in a way. I mean, it's not terribly complex, but it really helps everyone to sing. And so the parts of the Mass that we would call the order of the Mass, which is sometimes like the dialogue between the celebrant and the people. Singing those really sets a tone from the very beginning of Mass and throughout. So that one part in itself makes a big difference. And then you move on from that into what we call like the ordinary of the Mass. So the Kyrie, the Gloria, the Lamb of God, those parts of the Mass that are used over and over throughout the Eucharist. And then the propers. Mm-hmm. So each day there are certain orations that the priest, the main celebrant, has. And then there's also processional music and the response to the first reading, and those, of course, change from day to day. But each of those has a contribution to make that's very important to help us get a sense that we're really one with the saints and angels in heaven praising God, and also with the whole church here on earth.
Now, Derek, our audience, our television audience who tuned in regularly to the televised Mass, they've been watching you play the organ for our Mass for a long time. They've never met you.
Right.
And I'm sure they're very interested in meeting you and thanking you, really, for all the contributions you've made. You've been playing since 2001. And then in recent years, we've improved as far as the choir and adding members and so on. Talk about the influence or impact that sacred music has had on your own life.
I'd love to. And first of all, it's a tremendous honor to be here on this panel. Listening to the bishop, all those words resounded in my heart that he said. In particular, the desire of the church to sing, the desire of the church to sing sacred music. We have at our heart the desire, the love, the yearning to participate fully in Mass. And all we need is the help of the parish musician and the priest and a good bishop to steer us in the right direction. One of the things that is a beautiful gift about working in sacred music is I've discovered as I've gotten a little older that everything in my life up to this point has brought me to this place. It's pointed me to this vocation. And EWTN, in particular, has revealed in recent years, since the founding of the choir in 2015, what obedience has brought to my life. And by obedience, I mean we are a church of documents and we are a church of traditions. And obedience to the documents and obedience to the traditions has been freeing to me, and a great source of calm and a great source of peace to me. Once you walk in obedience with what the church has laid out in terms of liturgy, all of the answers are revealed. Everything comes to pass. It's important to remember, in liturgy, we are merely preparing what the church has already planned. So we're not called to innovation. We're called to faithfully prepare what the church has already planned, with an eye towards those documents and those traditions.
You know, in 2015, you and I were meeting, we were talking about adding the propers, for example, the entrance antiphon. And I think that's been a wonderful addition, not only for the people who are there, and we're making them available to the people in the pews,
right,
but also our production team puts it at the bottom of the screen, so our viewers too. And the entrance antiphon really just kind of sets the tone for the whole Mass.
It sure does. Just like the other beautiful morsels that the church lays before us, like the communion antiphon and the offertory sentence, those each have an important purpose. One thing I'd like to mention is that the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church are different in that the Catholic parish is much less homogeneous, so that process of uniting her people at the beginning of Mass is very, very important. To me, there's nothing better than that entrance antiphon to unite choir, people, and priests together with the purpose of going forward in the Divine Mass.
Now, Giorgio, tell us about Floriani and why the name and what is its purpose?
Great. Good to meet you all, by the way. We're a sacred music men's ensemble here in Phoenix, Arizona. And we started at Thomas Aquinas College, which is where all of us as singers went to school. So we were formed in primarily philosophy and theology. A great passion of mine that arose at St. Thomas Aquinas was sacred music. Our group originally started as a barbershop group. And one of the chaplains there asked us to sing for a Mass, and I was familiar with chant and polyphony, and so our group slowly transitioned to that, and we really began to love the music of the liturgy. In fact, we loved it so much that we thought, what if we could do this for a lifetime? What if we could go to parishes, introduce this in a really excellent form in their liturgies, give them concerts, retreats, And so at the start of COVID, this conversation really became more to the forefront. And so four of us decided, let's leave our jobs. We had a parish in Phoenix that wanted to bring us in as artists in residence. And so we all moved to Phoenix, and we started this group. And Floriani, the name is a little interesting. My confirmation saint is Saint Florian, and the reason we named it Floriani was actually after college, I was swimming in a river in the Yuba River in Northern California, and I actually got sucked down into a whirlpool and shot into class 5 rapids and should have drowned to death. And I miraculously was able to get out of the river. And as soon as I got out, I had this impulse to thank my confirmation saint, Saint Florian. And before I got in the river, I actually took off his medal. And it was only later on that I realized he was the patron saint of drowning victims.
Oh, wow.
And so he's the patron saint of not only drowning victims, but fire victims, both of which have I've been involved in. So there's the Thomas Fire at Thomas Aquinas, started near Thomas Aquinas College, which was the second biggest fire in California history. So he's been a saint that's been present in my life and all of our lives. And so we took him as our patron in starting this group.
Now talk about what you do when you go to parishes. What would be a typical way that you would introduce sacred music into a parish?
Great, yeah. So we've worked with a lot more, even more progressive parishes. And we obviously were very respectful of everyone's views on things. But we don't stop there. We introduce the documents of the church and the importance of chant and why that is so important to not only the church but us as Catholics. This is a huge part of our heritage, going all the way back to the time of Christ. And so it's something we're obligated to bring to our future generations, and we have to be the carriers of that tradition. And so the way that looks in a parish is we'll go in and usually we'll sing for a liturgy in the proper form. And following that, we will have a concert where we will introduce a vast variety of sacred pieces throughout the world. And this is all the time intrigues the interests of the faithful who are attending. These concerts and liturgies, they're not just for Catholics. We invite everyone to come see, and the response has been tremendous. We get a lot of support and a lot of interest in this really inestimable, this music of inestimable value.
Well, we're going to listen to a little clip that you prepared of the Salve Regina. So let's listen to that now.
Great.
Vita.
Beautiful. So tell us about that rendition, which I've never heard before.
I've been singing Champ for so long, and so a lot of times I get comfortable with it, and I like to riff on it, so to speak. And so this is a composition that brings together the chant of the West with a more of a ancient Roman Eastern flair to it. And so, there's not too much to say other than it's I call it a fusion of the East and the West, two styles I really like.
Bishop Olmsted, do you find that people like to sing the Mass? Do they participate better, do you think, in singing the Mass?
I think that some parishes that have not been doing much singing, it may in the beginning be an adjustment, but we were created to sing praise to God. And there's something that it does for our spirit when we sing. I also think it helps us to remember some of the key things that the Lord wants to say to us in that particular liturgy. I often felt like after the people left for Mass, they might remember a little of my sermon, but they'd be much more likely to remember the music that was sung, and especially the words that were put to music as well. So it enhances, it gives beauty, it makes us feel united together. And even those who maybe cannot sing as well, they're caught up in the larger choir of all the people singing together. So there's something about the Word of God, the liturgy of the Word being greatly enhanced, and then the mystery, the great mystery of the presence of the risen Christ among us in the Mass comes out, I think, much more when there's music there.
And the new Missal, promulgated in 2011, has the musical notation there actually for the celebrant, and it's actually quite easy to sing. It's not a lot of variation, it's just a couple of tones. So maybe talk about that too.
Yes, that was one of the great blessings of the new Roman Missal, is that the music is right there, and it's very singable. Here in the Diocese of Phoenix, Adam Bartlett helped all of us who were priests and deacons who wished to learn how to use the Missal. He helped us to do that. And really, they're not difficult to learn. You don't have to be a great musician. But it just lifts the quality. There's something so much more encompassing of our spirit and of our soul and of our heart when we sing.
Derek, talk about the development of our own choir. How has it impacted, you think, the singers in just participating in our Mass and singing this heritage of sacred music? I'm sure it's had an impact on them as well as to our audience throughout the world.
Oh, has it had an impact? Absolutely. Some of our choir members have, to our great joy, converted to Catholicism. One of our most important married couples both converted to Catholicism shortly after joining the choir. And that's part of the experience of being in the Holy Mass. You know, the Mass is the most perfect example of God's love for us. But when done well, it's the most perfect example of our love for God. Mm. And we are both humble and very genuine in our presentation of Mass here at EWTN, and it's something that you don't miss when you experience it live. And so the choir, now they're behind the reredos, but every bit still is much a part of that holy celebration. And so they have been brought to closer holiness with and a better relationship with God through their participation in sacred music, unquestionably. And I'll say one final nugget. The smallest beautiful nugget of truth in our liturgy becomes the prayer of those who sing it throughout the rest of that day. If it is simply, if today I hear your voice, harden not my heart. You know, these wonderful little nuggets that we have that are a gift from our church to us that go with us throughout the day. That's part of that inward conversion that I've seen in the choir. And I got to tell you, the choir, if I may step aside for a second and say, as important as we are to the viewers of you, EWTN. You viewers are every bit as loved and as important to us, and that goes for the choir too. We love you as much as you love us, and we love hearing from you. And what we try to do every day is a small gift to make the Mass beautiful for you the viewer, and for our love of God.
Yes, and you know, Bishop Olmsted, in his document, he wrote about the Mass as a love song, right? So Christ is singing his love song in the Mass, and our response too. So it's like bridegroom and the bride are singing a love song to each other.
Right, and speaking of love songs, I've got to compliment you on that CD singing. That is going to bear great fruit for our church. I hope it has wings and spreads far and wide, because I was really moved in listening. And one thing that struck me was how the architecture of the space, that wherever you filmed that, the architecture of the space and the nuance of the acoustic and the gorgeous singing came together in a way that gave me chills. I really appreciate hearing that.
Giorgio, how do you see your group benefiting the Eucharistic revival that we're in?
As Bishop Olmsted mentioned earlier, music is just it's an essential part of the liturgy. And so I think if you're able to bring incredibly beautiful sacred music to Mass, the faithful are inspired, and they're able to enter into the mystery of the liturgy much more deeply through the music. And with our group, we travel around the United States giving, singing at liturgies and giving sacred music concerts. And we see this as essential for the mission of the church in revitalizing love for the Eucharist.
Now, you say that our culture needs the good, the beautiful, and the true. Mm. Why is that?
It's pretty clear our culture has rejected the good and the true, at least not fully, but for the most part, we don't like the words morality. We hate the words commandments. All those things are meant to bring us to the true and the good. And so the one thing that our culture is still attracted towards, although they may not know it, are beautiful things. Mm-hmm. I heard of a story of a friend of mine walked into Cologne Cathedral to see a solemn high Latin Mass, and he wasn't a Catholic then, and he said he was completely broken inside and wounded by the beauty that he witnessed with the music, the movements of the priest, the incense flowing up to heaven. Beauty is absolutely essential to the liturgy, as Pope Benedict XVI mentioned in the Spirit of Liturgy, and it's a part of the liturgy we absolutely cannot leave behind in this time.
Absolutely. So we're coming toward the end of this first program. Thankfully, we're going to have a second program with you as well. But Bishop Olmsted, do you have any challenge or any closing words that you'd like to say to our viewers regarding sacred music and the enhancement of the liturgy?
You know, one of the things that always struck me when Pope Benedict, and even before as Cardinal Ratzinger, when he talked about the sacred liturgy, is he said that it was not intended to entertain. It's a much deeper thing than entertaining. It's really intended to help us sing God's praises and to sing with the church in heaven. So sacred music is not a small thing. It has a major contribution to the whole mission of the church and to evangelization.
And the church, in fact, says, right, that it's our greatest treasure of art. Our greatest art treasure is our sacred music heritage.
Yes, indeed, it is.
Derek, any closing challenge or thoughts that you have for our viewers regarding sacred music and growing in this appreciation of the enhancement of the liturgy through sacred music?
Father Joseph and I had some beautiful, meaningful conversations at the beginning of this journey in 2015. And one of the things that we decided is that we would lead with great kindness and competence. And so I would encourage church musicians that as you are leaders, as you are leaders of your choirs and in your parishes, lead with competence. In other words, make sure that you know the art that you are professing to know, and lead with kindness. Make sure that the love of God is heard in everything that you say and seen in everything that you do.
Wonderful. Giorgio, any challenge that you have for our viewers or closing comments?
You know, someone mentioned, I think Vatican II said that music is the greatest art that the church holds in her treasury. Mm-hmm. And I think a comment that music directly imitates the movements of our very soul. And so its power cannot be overestimated. If we're trying to bring the young, especially to a love of the Eucharist, and to bring non-Catholics, to introduce them into the mystery of the liturgy.
Beautiful. That is so true. You know that we all love music, right? And I like a distinction that Pope Benedict made between the different types of music. So romantic music is trying to stir up some sort of feeling, military to get everybody, you know, marching in the same step. And rock music is basically chaos, right? No responsibility. So freedom without responsibility. But sacred music is that elevated music that elevates our souls to the worship of God. And like you said, Bishop, so well, unites us as a people as we're singing these same words, these sacred words together, and how it unites us, but also elevates our worship. So I thank you all so much for being part of this first episode. And thankfully, as I said, we're going to have a second episode with you as well. And thank you all for joining us today, and continue to watch the Catholic Sphere as we tackle different topics that are relevant to our time. I like to especially address the topics related to the Eucharistic revival, as well as some other topics. And we'll see you next week here on the Catholic Sphere with host Debbie Cowden.